I often think that the night is more alive and more richly colored than the day. Vincent van Gogh.
Welcome to Through My Lens with Clay Daly.
And we're back. I'm Clay, and I'm here with Brian Manier, fellow Caption One proer, fellow Fuji filmer, fellow celluloid film shooter, fellow Star Warrior. Now, most importantly, fellow Luna grapher.
Yes. Yes.
If that's the word.
It is now.
I was looking at Twitter, and that picture shared, I was man-crushing. That picture with the listeners, it'll be in the show notes, but the trees and the stars, two things I love combined into one.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, beautiful.
Oh, thanks, man.
What inspires you? Because I feel like the things you shoot, they talk to me. Now, what talks to you to go out and shoot?
Oh, man, that's a great question. Well, thank you, first off. You're very kind.
Welcome.
And I love hearing that the stuff that I do connects with people, because ultimately, like, that's the only reason for me to share it. You know, it's never for, like, the likes and the stupid stuff, mm-hmm. you know, the dumb aspects of social media. But I just love connecting with other people and kind of, I guess my one goal is to kind of connect emotionally, like what I was feeling when I was capturing something mm-hmm. or post-processing something, to, you know, give someone that kind of same interaction when they see my work. Mm-hmm. So to hear that, you know, it's kind of landing with some people makes me super happy.
It's landing hard, dude.
As for what inspires me to shoot, my gosh, that's such a loaded question. To me, I never feel more myself than when I have a camera in my hands. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's just this, at this point, it's just a running joke. You know, people see me, and if I don't have a camera, which is very rare, they're like, come on, where's the camera? You know what I mean? Where's the camera?
Yeah.
It's something, even if it's, you know, it could be a 120 medium format behemoth, like my RB67 hanging off of my side, or just a, you know, a tiny little X100F or something. But I usually always have something with me, just because I've been burnt so many times in the past where I see something and I kick myself, you know, for not. And obviously we all have our cell phones, but to me, there's definitely an intentionality that I have when I'm looking through the viewfinder of a camera mm-hmm. that I just lack when I'm shooting with a phone. I mean, I've taken some fun photos with a phone, don't get me wrong, and they're very capable, and they're a camera just like anything else. But there's just something to me about looking through a viewfinder and being out in nature and experiencing the unpredictability of weather and sun and clouds, and are there going to be stars tonight? Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The particular shots that you're referencing, I shot earlier this fall. I went to Colorado for a few days mm-hmm. and spent some time with a friend out there. And we were coming back from kind of a long day trip where we slept in the rooftop tent of the Jeep that I was renting. And we were kind of coming back. He lives out of an Airstream. So we were going back to where he had his Airstream parked, and we just couldn't stop. We'd had this incredibly epic day, very little sleep, just shooting nonstop. And then we're almost back and we're just dog tired. And we're just driving these back roads, and the stars and the moonlight is popping through, and it's just giving this beautiful light. But we just looked at each other like, well, there's no real question here, right? Like, we're going to stop and shoot. And so that's kind of what it was. Like, we just spent an hour to an hour and a half just shooting this beautiful fall color against the, I'd never shot anything like that before, the yellow aspens of Colorado against this like vivid blue starry background. And so
it's very dreamy.
Yeah. It was just beautiful. And the way that the sun, what was the temperature?
Was it
cold? I mean, at that point, it was probably high 30s.
Oh, wow.
Probably like 36, 37, somewhere around there. Definitely wasn't warm. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. But yeah, I mean, it just, I think to me, anytime I'm out in a place like that, I'm grasping at anything I can to shoot because I know I have limited time there and no idea when I'm going to be able to come back. You know, I'm a family guy with a full-time job. So the trips, though, I do get to take trips, which I'm thankful for, but they're definitely not as often as I would like. So anytime I'm out shooting, whether it's locally here or, you know, I'm on a trip somewhere, I'm definitely maximizing my time.
Right.
Just knowing that, you know, I don't want to sacrifice anything while I'm out.
So your advice for people is definitely look everywhere, look up and stop to take the picture, right?
Yeah, just always. I can't even tell you how much changed for me when I stopped being the guy that was driving down the road because I was on my way to work or on my way to something. And I would see something along the side of the road and be like, oh, that, you know, that'd be a great photo. But I didn't have it in me to stop because I was still thinking like, no, I can't be late to this. Or I, you know, I have this one track mind. So when I stopped being that guy, I think everything really started to change for me. Like the way that I see started to change. And everything. Like, I feel like I'm, it was interesting because for me, and I don't want to dig too deep into it, but when I was a photographer for a long time before I really like rededicated myself to landscape photography.
Yeah.
And I feel like there was this big fundamental shift in the way that I saw the world, the way that I shot the world, when I decided to really focus, put my focus on my passion in photography. And I think probably the biggest positive for me was seeing that, you know, probably I had probably had like a 7 to 8 year career in photography at that point. And when I really changed the way that I looked at the world, I feel like things started growing exponentially in kind of my passion for it and the, just honing my skills and getting better at the stuff that I was really, you know what I mean? Because I feel the world that I was in, I was always hunting for the next gig for the paycheck. And so I never really took a lot of time to focus on the craft and kind of get better at what I was doing. So I feel like for a long time there, you know, in my, I'll call it my portrait and wedding career. I feel like I kind of plateaued, you know, and I wasn't really going anywhere as far as skill level. And then that all really changed when I was like, I'm always going to have a camera with me. And if I see something, I'm going to stop.
Yeah. That's good advice. I mean, you know, I'm that guy where I always have a camera with me, but I am also that guy who I see the thing on the side of the road and I'm like, man, that would be an awesome shot. And I don't stop. And I really should. And I kick myself all the time for it.
Well, believe me, don't get me wrong. I'm probably 90% not that guy, but there are still times when I drive past something and I'm like, well, I feel like I'll see something better and I'll stop for that. And then it just never comes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then I regret it later on. But I think once you have enough of those kind of experiences, you start stopping more. And so that's kind of where I'm at, is I'm always willing to stop. But there are definitely, I mean, there, you know, I take my 3-year-old out with me at times.
That's awesome. When I see you guys doing the journeys, that really is awesome. Yeah.
It's fun. And it's a lot of it is selfish. I will admit, because I want him to, I mean, I want us to have these moments and remember and want him to remember these. I mean, I don't know if he'll remember these moments, but I want to remember these moments. And if anything, I want to get him used to that idea. Like, so, you know, he wakes up at like 6 every morning, comes in and is like, hey, dad, let's go. Like, let's do this.
That's awesome.
And, you know, so I've kind of gotten in the habit of, hey, buddy, you want to go shoot the sunrise or you want to go, you know, and more often than not, he's like, yeah, let's do it.
That's
so
awesome.
I just want to get in that habit because I don't know. I like that. And I like that I have something that I can kind of pass on to him a little bit, or something that we can grow with together.
Yeah.
It's definitely really exciting to me.
Definitely. Yeah. I wished that I had done, I mean, I used to draw and paint as a child, but I wish You know, photography, I came to photography after realizing that I suck at drawing. You know, yeah. That was my collection, collecting device, right? You know, take a picture to come back to draw it. And sure. I kind of wish that I had learned about photography at a younger age. And I think your son will definitely thank you for it.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, all kids are creative, right? Mm. It's just kind of innately in us to be creative when we're young. And, and we have all these big ideas and this huge imagination. And I think anytime you can cultivate that, especially the way, I don't want to give my parents any crap because I think they did a great job. You know, I have no complaints with where I am, but I definitely think that it was just a sign of the times. Like when I was growing up, there just wasn't this widely available creative market that there is now, you know? Yeah. So like me looking at the path that's set forth before my son, like the freaking sky is the limit. And sure, like I'm sure my parents thought, oh, he can do whatever he wants to do. And in that kind of lofty way that every parent thinks of them, their kids. Mm-hmm. But there was no, you know, if they saw something creative in me, there was no real reason for them to cultivate that. And and now I feel like if I see my son like having a particular interest in computers or whatever, then I'm gonna like push him to start to learn to code. And you know what I mean? I just feel like there's a lot more available now. And so I think just anytime you can encourage that, any kind of creativity in a younger kid, that it definitely goes a long way and just fulfillment as they grow.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. You know, the first time I knew I was gonna have to have you on my show was when I did an episode, forgot what it was called, but I had spoken about replacements or sky replacements. I think it was like the response to Mac episode.
Yeah.
And that was the picture where you had taken it. I think it was like a 500 millimeter and 16 millimeter. You remember that?
Oh yes, yep. It was one of the the lunar eclipse,
yeah. So I knew right then and there. I was like, okay, if you look in the Discord, I'm gonna put this in the show notes, listeners, but yeah. That's the picture, right? I knew. Yep. I was like, okay, that this is like, you know, because I looked at this picture and I was instantly taken back to a moment of me sitting watching the moon myself taking pictures of it. Right. Yeah. And, yep. You know, I think, not to rehash that episode, but I think that the ability to have, and it's not like you're not telling people that this isn't a composite, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people know that this is a composite, correct?
Sure. Yeah.
So I think the ability to have an imagination and create, because I mean, like when I was creating the shots, I didn't have any stars in mind.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And I wish, like when I saw your picture, I was like, man, I wish I had done that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's thinking outside the box. And I love it when people think outside the box. Like,
right. Yeah. I did. I actually, it's funny. I listened to your show. I don't remember if I told you or not, but I listened to that show. But yeah, I think it always comes down to intention for me. And I think a lot of the vision that I have with photography is, I come at it from a little bit of a painter's mentality almost, or something where, you know, I picked up a camera because I've never been good at anything else, right? Like I've never been able to paint and I've never been able to draw. I took a figure drawing class in college and I got like decent, but I could definitely tell that it wasn't like in the cards for me to pursue that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think because I have such an extensive background in just like graphic design and things of that nature, where I've, you know, worked for companies where I'm just doing full on composites of things and building scenes from, you know, 30 different photos. I don't ever approach my photography from like that as the starting point, thinking I'm just going to take these 16 photos and then put them all together. But I think inevitably, well, we'll just speak to the shot you're referencing. Like I can remember standing out. I was literally in my driveway. I was just standing in my driveway It was January, I think. It was freezing. I mean, yeah. It was so cold here in Michigan. And I remember standing in my driveway and I'm shivering and shooting. And when you're zoomed in that much, the moon moves really freaking fast.
Yeah.
And so I kept having, and I want to eventually start tinkering around with like star trackers and things like that, where you're able to do longer exposure shots, mm-hmm. Because you can track the rotation of the earth. But I just wasn't there. And so I'm, you know, shooting and recomposing and shooting and recomposing. And at one point I feel like I bracketed for some reason, just because I wanted to see if I could, what kind of detail I could bring out of like an emerged HDR. Mm-hmm. And, the brightest bracket ended up being too long of an exposure and the moon started to blur. But what I noticed when I was reviewing the shots is that I started seeing like a few, maybe like three or four stars pop up. Mm-hmm. And in that moment, I was like, oh, that's what I have to do. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll take another shot with my 16 millimeter, which is my go-to astro lens. And what's funny is I don't remember if you could do a gallery post on Instagram at this point yet. Mm. But I should have posted the two shots that I merged together.
Yeah.
Because inevitably what happened was the 16 millimeter shot, I actually had the moon in dead center of my frame, but it was very small.
Small, yeah.
That shot in and of itself was really cool.
Yeah.
Like, it was kind of cool seeing this tiny little red dot lunar yeah. eclipse moon in this sea of stars. But I ended up just like, you know, clone stamping the little tiny dot out and dropping the larger moon in there. And then, you know, I always try to kind of do it in a way to where it's a little more, I mean, obviously you couldn't capture that in camera and most people know that, but that it's not just like wildly HDR crazy yeah. looking. Yeah. I always want to go that kind of teetering where somebody can look at it and be like, wait, did he? How? You know what I mean?
Very clean, very clean.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah. But yeah, I think I always approach it from that angle. And anytime like I talk about, you know, merging shots or, you know, doing any sort of compositing, like I don't care. Like, if you're an artist, do whatever the heck you want to do. But just don't try to pass it off. Like, that's where I kind of draw the line yeah, is no, people that try to pass it off as something that they actually... Like, cause I just, what are you getting out of that? Like, just bragging rights that you're that good a photographer that you can capture something like that in camera, even though the None rest of the photographers yeah. know that we can't do right. that. It just doesn't make any sense to
it
me.
Doesn't.
So,
yeah, no, yeah. I'm 100% with you. And yeah, again, I looked at this picture and I was like, darn it. Why didn't I think of
that? Why didn't I think of that? Right. Yeah. Well, you know, what's funny. I think my path to a lot of those moments, because I haven't had many of those moments, but I've had a couple where I'm like, oh yeah, why haven't I ever done this before? Why hasn't someone ever done this before? Mm-hmm. Have been just me seeing somebody else's thing and being like, oh crap, why didn't, yeah, I could have done that, you know?
Yeah.
And so you have enough of those moments and then you kind of start thinking.
Yeah.
Start thinking ahead a little bit, or something like seeing some stars in a, you know, an overexposed image, mm-hmm. you know, kind of triggers it off to you. But I think going back to what I started this whole kind of tangent on was, I think, and this is something I kind of try to teach and touch on whenever that I'm teaching any sort of workshop, is kind of having a vision, like when I'm shooting, whether I'm using filters or a particular lens or a particular, like, I'm bracketing versus just a single shot exposure. I'm always thinking about the end result mm-hmm. at that moment.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I never just like spraying and then thinking, I'll just deal with it later. I think having that intentionality of, and just kind of like the vision looking forward, when you kind of know your process, what you get to know your process mm-hmm. well enough that you can kind of start to envision these things, you know, and so you plan for that sort of thing. And yeah, I think I don't know, it's fun.
Yeah,
it just makes, at least for me, it makes photography all the more fun, you know, when you're kind of working forward like that.
Yeah, I agree. Do you have any, maybe, tips, I guess, for people who are looking to go shoot the stars, the moon, the Milky Way?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. Gosh, I just recently taught a whole workshop on, and I had a, like a 30 minute segment on astrophotography.
Really?
Yeah.
Is it online?
It's not, no. I keep meaning to, I have so many friends that do video that would be able to like help me put something together like that. I need to do it, but I can break it down real, real simply. Because when it comes to astrophotography, the settings almost kind of explain themselves to you. I know everybody looks at it as kind of this like kind of terrifying or just like a crazy thing that seems very daunting and complicated, but it's really not, because there's a few things that if you know, and if you have the right apps to help you, that it just really makes it super easy for you. So a couple things up front. One, you know, I tried to shoot stars for a long time before I was really like a landscape photographer and knew any better. And I just didn't have the understanding of light pollution that I do now. So the biggest thing that you can do is download a dark sky app. You know, most of the time you can just Google dark sky finder and a website will come up or an app will come up, and that's going to show you, you know, basically a map of the world, and it maps out light pollution. So typically you want to find a place that has a low level of light pollution because you can see more stars that way. Mm-hmm. Another thing to consider is if the moon is, you know, at what phase the moon is at. Obviously when it's a new moon and there is no brightness in the sky that is taking away from the overall brightness of the stars, that's the best time for you to shoot stars. And then depending on what hemisphere of the world you're in, and what time of year it is, you know, the Milky Way either will be at its galactic center, which is kind of the brightest portion of the Milky Way. It's what, if you've ever seen a Milky Way photo, chances are you're looking at the galactic center, because there's not a lot of people that shoot the opposite end, although I have a few times. But yeah, that's, if you're in the US, like eastern side of the US, it's usually like, I feel like I just knew this, but I'll say like June through like September.
Yeah, I think that's
to right, October yeah. is usually about when you're seeing the galactic center. And the other months you're going to see, you'll still be able to see something. It just won't be very bright and like that real distinct thick Milky Way look. Mm-hmm. There's a great app that I constantly use called Photopills, PILLS.
It's a must have.
Yes, must have. Like it's $10, but it is the best $10 you will ever spend on an app. And it tells you all of this information as well as like being able to, in augmented reality, track like the moon and the sun's arc in the sky, where the Milky Way is going to be in the sky at a particular date. Like you can think in advance, you can plan your shots in advance. I can't tell you how many times I found a cool like weather vane or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And I want to see, oh, I wonder if there's ever a time of year where the sun is going to set directly behind this thing. And all I have to do is pull out Photopills and I can, you know, tell that in real time.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
So
but
cool.
Yeah. So then once you have kind of an understanding of those things and you pick kind of a place and a date and whatever, getting out and shooting the stars, kind of my starting point is you want to have a wider lens, obviously, if you're wanting to shoot kind of landscape with the stars in it. And then you want a fast lens. So my go-to astro lens is a Fujifilm 16mm f1.4. It's about a 24mm full frame equivalent lens. So it's a decent, like, it's probably my go-to landscape lens. It's just really, really good for all kinds of stuff. There's also a cheap option, the Rokinon or Samyang 12mm f2. It's also a great astrophotography lens because it's wide, much wider than, and it still has a pretty fast f2 aperture. So what's weird about stars is you want to let as much light into the sensor as possible. Mm-hmm. So you're actually doing like when we're shooting landscapes, we're like f8, f16, you know, usually, because you want to maximize that depth of field. But when you're shooting stars, you actually want the opposite, which is weird, but as much light in as possible. So right there, you have your first setting, right? You're shooting wide open on your faster wide angle lens. Mm-hmm. And from there, we need to determine what's called the 500 rule. So the 500 rule says how fast our shutter speeds can be at a particular focal length before we start seeing like the rotation of the earth creep in. Mm-hmm. So like, obviously you think, you know, when you're shooting with like a telephoto lens, you're magnifying all that shake, right? Because you're so zoomed in. The same thing happens with the rotation of the earth. If you're zooming, like I just referenced with the moon, when you're shooting that far zoomed in on the moon, it moves faster because you're closer to it.
Yep.
Same thing happens with the earth. So the 500 rule says, whatever your focal length is, your shutter speed, I forget the physicality of it. I can explain it like this. And PhotoPills also has a plug-in, a segment for this. But it's basically like, you know, my 24 millimeter, my 16 millimeter 1.4, I can't go faster than 20 seconds. If I go to 25 seconds, I start to see blurry stars.
Yeah.
So if you zoom in more, like if I was shooting with a 56 millimeter lens, it's going to be like 12 seconds maybe, or 15 seconds. It's going to get shorter and shorter and shorter, because the further zoomed in you are, the shorter time you need before you start to see the rotation of the earth. So a wider lens would actually mean you could go longer on your shutter speed. So we'll just use the lens that I use, because I know its setting. So I already have my first, I know I want to shoot wide open. So I'm at f1.4. And then I have my shutter speed, because the 500 rule tells me I can't go faster than 20 seconds. So then the only other thing you have left is the ISO. Mm-hmm. And all you do with the ISO is set it to where you're exposed properly. So you either go as high as you need or as low as you need. Usually on my camera, I'm between 800 to 3200 ISO, depending on how, if there's like those shots that I shared earlier today that you were referencing in the beginning of the episode. I was closer to 800 just because there was moonlight coming in. So that was what's illuminating all the foreground, and I didn't need, higher ISO. If you're shooting when there's no moonlight, you're either going to have to, another trick that you could do is you could, if you're obviously shooting on a tripod for stars, you could also do a shot where you're just exposing for the foreground, and you could do a minute exposure, a 2 minute exposure, or whatever. Your stars are going to be completely blurred out, mm-hmm. but that would be your foreground exposure. And then you could do another exposure just for the stars with the 500 rule taking into account, and then blend the brighter foreground from the one exposure with the crispy stars from the second exposure. So that's something else that I've done on occasion, just to kind of, you know, battle that point where, you know, the best time to shoot stars in the Milky Way is when the moon has set.
Yeah.
So the stars are the brightness in the sky, but that also usually means that your foreground is going to be really dark or noisy. Yeah. So that's just combining exposures like that is just another way to combat that kind of that thing. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
honestly,
that's really brilliant, man. Thank you. And well, listeners, you should thank him, because he set you up. He told you exactly how to do it.
That's all you got to do. Yeah. And then find something cool in the foreground, exactly. And then you're good, you know?
Now, with the 500 rule, basically, you want to, of course, include the crop factor, right? So the 20, you would divide it by 24.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Of course.
Before you go,
yeah,
your podcast, We the Creators, mm-hmm. you know, people go check it out. Last episode, you had a solo, a monologue, which I enjoyed.
Yes. So
more of those, please.
You
said you're going to, a year from now, we need to hold you accountable, but I'll talk to you about the film developing now. So you said that you were considering C41, right? The color film.
Yes.
And I would say it's, you know, a lot of people will say, oh, black and white is easy.
Yes.
Color film is so much easier to do than.
That's what I've heard. You know, I've heard, but I've only ever developed black and white myself. Mm. It's funny, because when you're in that world and you have that mindset, yeah, color just seems so much more complicated. But then I just, for whatever reason, and I wasn't expecting it to be this way, but when I started shooting film again, mm-hmm. My intention was film was going to be my black and white work, and then digital would be my color work, because I've always wanted to find a way to have some outlet where I'm sharing black and whites because I love it so much. But for whatever reason, I've just fallen in love with shooting color film. And so, yeah, I started researching the process, watched a couple YouTube videos, and I was like, with the exception of the color, like having to bring it, the chemicals to temperature, like there's really, it's so easy. It makes no sense. It's super reusable.
Oh, yeah. And the funny thing is that, like, I think it was, I forgot which company, but they, because I started using a Surveyor machine, right? Like, you know, a couple of years ago. And then these companies came out with a Survey kit thing that you use. I don't know what they call them, like, but you basically, you know, stick us the Survey, you know what a Survey machine is, right? The little stick.
Yeah.
You stick that in there and your temperature is set. Like, you basically just tell it what temperature it's unbelievably easy. So the only thing is to just fill the water up and that's it.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's so much easier than black. I love doing black and white developing, but like I shoot a lot more film, color film now because the C41 is so much easier.
Yeah. Well, and it's funny the other day. I have in my Amazon cart, I have like, you know, bottles and the chemical, the powder chemical pack, and then the, your standard like developer tank that has like the double 35 and the single 120 deal. And I have all that in my cart. And I was going to wait and see like how many, I usually get a lot of Amazon gift cards for Christmas. And so I was just going to wait and see like how many gift cards I got and just use those towards all my film gear. And then I was at work the other day and we, in my office, I share a room with a bunch of videographers and, we have the shelf in between our desks that's just filled with just junk. Anything, any cord you can think of, just junk. And I happened to walk past the other day, the same shelf that I walk past every day, and I see like a film tank. And I was like, what in the world? And I looked at my coworker and I was like, why is there a tank here? And he was like, oh yeah, somebody found it. And like, I had some rolls of film that I thought I could develop myself. And so they gave it to me. And it's just been there. It's literally the same thing that's been in my cart for like 3 weeks and it's just sitting there. So I got a free film tank, which is awesome. A developing tank. So I'm you know, a quarter of the way there.
Yeah.
I'm really excited though. Really excited.
Believe me, it's so much fun. And the thing is that you said you're going to do the scanning with your camera, right?
Yes.
Which is the easiest way to go, trust me. I did the scanning via flatbed when I started shooting it with a macro. It's so much better.
Well, it's good to hear. It's good to have that kind of reinforcement because that's, I mean, it's crazy when I started looking into the whole scanning thing even back in April when I was just getting the lab that I use sends me scans, but they're not great scans. They're pretty low resolution. So even back then I was like, well, what kind of flat, being a designer, like I used flatbed scanners all the time in school. But it's just not something that I have ever needed since. So when I started looking into the scanner options that are available, I was really disappointed. It didn't seem, even like the most prosumer friendly, what is it, the Epson V600 or whatever it is, like it's pretty expensive and it's really not that great from the reviews that I read, least from like a scanning film standpoint.
Yeah, I agree. And actually, if you were to scan just a 120 film, it's actually okay. 35mm, like to me, it looks like garbage, especially when you compare it to a macro lens. Like I have a 90mm macro shooting it, you know, shooting it at its closest focus and distance.
Sure.
You know, you bring that into Capture One Pro and I mean, beautiful, like gorgeous. Yeah. You have a raw file. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So, and I think, I mean, now I've owned the GFX for like 4 months now and it's been crazy, but thinking like that I could have 50 megapixel scans of my negatives is just like, that kind of sold me on that, you know, I mean, and that's not to say that, I mean, I'm sure I'll scan with my, I actually had a friend give me some cheap autofocus macro extension tubes for just the X series cameras.
Yeah.
So, and I've been playing around with those. So I think actually those, cause I could actually turn with those, I could turn the lenses that I have into a macro focusing lens, that I could scan film with. So I'm going to try both and kind of see, you know, see what works best for me. But I'm just really excited at the whole prospect of, you know, all of it, because the biggest pain in the butt to me is, as much as, I mean, we just talked about it, like, I love shooting with that kind of intention to post process, but with film, and I went into this in my rant on my podcast, but like, I feel like I'm missing that whole, the post, which is actually developing your film yourself. Like, that part has been missing. And I think that's why initially I was really excited about film when I first started back into it. And then it just kind of felt like, man, I want to expand further into this, but I need to start doing this stuff myself, because I don't want to, you know, always have to rely on a lab to do this. And then most of them, like, the local lab that I use won't push or pull process. Oh, so if I ever wanted, they won't even do it. Oh. And when I shot some black, and they don't process black and white, they only process color. Really? So the stuff that I shot in black and white when I was in the Middle East, I had to send off to the darkroom lab, which they did a great job, but I had to wait like 3 months for them to get me my scans back.
What?
It was forever that it took them. Yeah. For me to actually send them off. And then I had to wait and wait and wait. And I kept checking and kept checking and kept checking. And it was still like in process.
I didn't know it took that long.
Yeah. Well, they're the only lab that I've ever used outside of my local one that I'm sure not all of them are like that. And they could have just been it was over the summer, so they could have just been backed up, but I don't know. It just wasn't fun. That whole process of like waiting for something and when I could just easily do it myself if I put the time in, you know?
Yeah. Definitely.
So.
All right. Well, I guess hopefully you'll be talking about it in the solo episode, because I think people would love to hear that.
Yeah, man. I think now that I've gotten, again, me talking about the film was a lot of like being held accountable, but it was part two, just also me getting the ball rolling on talking solo on the podcast, because I've wanted to do it for so long and then just always drag my feet on stuff. So yeah, there's definitely, I'm leaving tomorrow to go back home and home where I'm from in Ohio. I'm going to spend Thanksgiving with my family.
Yeah.
And I'm taking my H6, and I'm thinking when I go out and shoot one of, my parents, I'm from like middle of nowhere, very rural Ohio. And I love just driving around back roads and seeing what I can find. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking probably what I'm going to do is take my H6 and maybe record some stuff like while I'm out on location, just scouting or shooting or something. I don't know. I just want to try to have some fun with it and see what I can come up with. And
that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I know I ambushed you, but
it was great, man. Well, I'm just happy to be on here. Happy that you asked, for sure.
Thank you so much. Tell all the listeners where they can find you.
Oh man. Okay. Well, it depends on what you want. If you want a lot of photos that are maybe some crappy and some not so crappy, but you like hearing some snarkiness, follow me on Twitter at Brian Manier, BRYAN.
He's good on Twitter. Sorry, I cut you off. Go ahead.
You're good. Just Brian with a Y and then MINEAR. If you want portfolio shots, look at instagram.com/BrianManier. And then you can always find me at BrianManier.com and WeTheCreatorsPod.com is my podcast. You can go check that out too. Lots of stuff. Just depends on what you want.
Very cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Alrighty. I'd like to thank Brian again for coming on. It was really, really a blast talking to him. It's really nice seeing creators who create beautiful work also be very genuine, kind-hearted people. So yeah, definitely go check out all of his projects, his websites, his social media presences. And you can also check us out, you can check me out at cwdaily.com. All my usernames are cwdaily. This podcast actually has its own user account. It's with Clay Daily on Twitter. And on Instagram, it is through my lens with Clay Daily. So with Clay Daily on Twitter and Through My Lens with Clay Daly on Instagram. Thank you and ciao. Till next time.